Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Dr. John Stamey, and I want to welcome everybody to ScaryCast, the scariest 90 minutes on the radio, I'll tell you that. Anyway, we've got an absolutely superb show tonight, and I want to introduce our panelists. First of all, from the queen of ScaryCast, what more can I say, Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight, Robin?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here. Excited to see what the show has to bring tonight.
We are so glad to have you here, and thanks a lot for being here. And then, of course, we were talking about, I was joking about the Addams Family, because Wednesday, the new series by Tim Burton is coming on soon on Netflix. I will be there for the first episode. Wouldn't miss it for the world. And my old Addams Family buddy, one of our original ScaryCast member, along with me, Devin Tate, tonight. How are you doing, Devin?
Hey, John, I'm doing great. I'm very excited for the new show also. Just think about Charles Addams and how happy he probably would be knowing how his creation is, you know, keeps re-entering the pop culture zeitgeist again and again.
Really and truly, I mean, Charles Addams brought something to us that no one else ever has. So anyway, thanks, Charles Addams, wherever you are, and glad to have you here, Devin. And the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, the one and only Dr. Trey Donaway. How are you doing tonight, Trey?
Nice evening, John. Happy to be here.
We are glad you're here, absolutely. And, of course, our man from Houston, Texas, Kyler Smith. How are you doing tonight, Kyler?
Doing good, John. Can't wait to hear what we got for tonight.
Yeah, we got a good one tonight. So anyway, our guest tonight is Eric Yoder. Eric is a filmmaker from Los Angeles, and I think I've been friends with him for 3 or 4 or 5 years. That probably back when I was working on some film festivals and things like that. And I saw, it was probably 4 weeks ago, maybe three, I saw a post from him with a picture of a werewolf, and it said Walpurgis Night. Well, now that is absolutely one of my favorite topics, because I'm the big Bram Stoker fan. And I saw it and I said, oh my God, this is great. So what I did was I called him up on Facebook, I think, or whatever, and we started talking, and I immediately said to myself, this guy has got to be on ScaryCast. So tonight, welcome to you, Eric Yoder. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, happy to be here.
We are glad you're here. So the first thing I'd like for you to do is tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us about your film. And I know you have produced and directed other films, so give us a little background and tell us about this film, and then we'll have our panelists ask you some questions, and then we'll delve into my version of Walpurgis Night. So it's right there with you, buddy. Welcome to ScaryCast. Tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm originally from Pennsylvania. I lived there for most of my life and always got into special makeup effects and filmmaking and that sort of thing, and growing up with different obscure, weird horror movies. And it was just always something that I knew I wanted to pursue from probably around 5 years old. And then that just evolved into doing little short films because I always wanted to do effects for movies. And, you know, if you grow up where I'm from and the backwoods of Pennsylvania, nobody else is going to be making films of any kind, and especially one with effects. So I said, well, if nobody's going to ask me to do effects for their projects, I'm just going to do my own projects. So basically my entire life growing up was just revolved around making short films, doing effects for short films. And then that just eventually led me out here to L.A., where now I do it full-time, and that's my full-time career. And I've gotten a good opportunity to work on a lot of big-name projects and a few other cool things coming up. And one that I can't really talk about right now, but it's one of the biggest horror franchises, so I'm going to be working on that within the next week. So a lot of cool stuff, but a little bit about the film that we're talking about here is based off of Paul Nashie movie. I don't know if anyone even knows here. I'm curious if anyone even knows who Paul Nashie is.
Well, I don't. Does anyone else know?
I don't.
No, I don't.
Well, that's one of the main reasons for me making this is that answer exactly. Paul Nashie was considered to be like the Lon Chaney or Boris Karloff of Spain, the 70s and 80s. And he made over 200 movies where he either played a werewolf, vampire, Frankenstein monster, mummy, you name it. Every classic movie monster, he played it. But the main thing he was known for was doing these Wolfman movies. And they were the first Wolfman movies that were in color, had blood, had nudity, had like the stereotypes of a modern-day werewolf movie. He was the first one to do it. And he made about 12 of these werewolf movies. And they're pretty primarily unknown. And I grew up watching those like on bootleg, weird tapes, eventually DVDs. And I would always talk about it, and nobody ever knew who he was. So I just always, as a kid, around six, saying, I'd love to do something like that in that style, you know. But as a kid, you know, you don't have much things available to do so. So it took a long time, and after writing the script for many, 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 many years, I eventually got the money and the opportunity to actually direct it into a feature. So that's the film that I ended up making, Walpurgis Night.
Wow, that's a great story. I mean, I can identify with that because I loved Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine, and I took part in the Testor Aurora monster, the monster model contests. In fact, I won the Morganton franchise. I want everyone to know I won the Morganton franchise. It was great. It was probably the highlight of my life. I was just so eaten up with monsters, and my parents had to listen to all those monster films at 2 and 3 and 4 in the morning when I would watch them on the UHF channels. Nobody knows what a UHF channel is, but I mean, I just loved them to death. It was like, that's how I grew up and everything. And I certainly can identify with that. So tell us a little bit, I know you don't want to give away the story. But tell us a little bit about this wonderful film that you've got, and you told me that it's going to be available in November.
So the film is basically a compilation of a lot of Paul Nashie movies, kind of mashed into one in the sense of the tropes, and because a lot of the movies that he did, they weren't sequels to each other, but they were like loosely connected, so they all followed a basic premise. So that's basically what I did. And the main influence for the film is a movie called, and it's a funny title, Dr. Jekyll versus the Werewolf. And that's basically what our story is based around, is that premise of that movie. But at the same time, with the Nashie tropes and my original take on it. So that's the film as a whole. So even if you wanted to get a synopsis of what the movie is, all you'd have to do is watch like one or two Paul Nashie movies, and you would understand the kind of thing we're going for. So it's basically just a throwback to 70s foreign horror cinema, and it's shot very much like a 70s film, and the film takes place in 1972. So that's the whole gist of the movie, I would say, summed up into one.
Well, now you know, I hope you remember one of the greatest 70s horror films of all time. Are you ready for me to spring this on you?
Mm-hmm.
Blackula.
Oh, my goodness. I do remember the title. Mm-hmm.
What a great film. And I can't even remember the guy that played it, but he was a Shakespearean actor. He was black. And it was truly a monster film, no pun intended. It was a monster film. People loved that film. It's still popular even today, Blackula. So, you're talking about the 70s and the horror films. We're talking about the end of the Vietnam War. We're talking about great fantasy, great horror. So that's wonderful. And who is the star of this film?
It's a man named Shane Ronzio. He's a pretty unknown actor, if anything. I mean, he's been acting, but and nothing very big. He's local to Pittsburgh, and basically he started doing more of the serious acting with me, and that was mainly because I wanted somebody that had a Paul Naschy look. And again, I know you guys don't know what he looks like, but he has a distinct look. So I wanted somebody that gave me that vibe. And he is brothers with another friend of mine who's another effects artist. And when I saw him and was talking to him, I said, you'd be perfect for it. And he said, well, I don't really act or anything, but he's had experience. But I said, well, let's just give it a try. And as soon as you put that werewolf makeup on, he became alive. And he really took on the character, and he did a fantastic job.
Wow, that's great. And now can you give us just the quick, high-level overview of the plot? The high-level plot is boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl. That's a high-level plot because we don't want to spoil this for everybody. But can you give us the highest-level plot for this movie?
So basically there's a married couple that are having their honeymoon in Transylvania. They're visiting from London, and then they are attacked by the locals, and only the girl survives and is rescued by the main character. And knowing that he has something wrong with him, she takes him to London, where she's friends with one of the grandsons of Dr. Jekyll, and they seek to get help. And put it this way, things don't go well, and the werewolf goes loose in London.
That couldn't be better. Henry Hull from Werewolf of London would love that. American Werewolf in London would love this. This just sounds absolutely special and great. Now, is this an original script by you, correct?
I would say like 85%, yes. And I only say that because of the Naschy tropes and connections to the other movies that we have in there as a tribute to those movies.
This sounds like it was nothing but a labor of love and something that you really wanted to do, correct?
Yeah, very much so. I'd say for about 15 years, yeah.
Okay, great. Well, I tell you what, I want to bring the panel in. I would like to ask any one of our panel members to ask you a question. We're talking about 70s horror. We're talking about werewolves. We're talking about anything that you want to ask. And I'm going to ask the Queen of Scarycast, Robin McCrae, do you have a question for our guest? This is just, I'm sorry, you caught me at a priceless moment here. Robin, do you have a question for our gentleman?
But I feel really bad because I've never been a horror buff, but like the Dracula and that kind of stuff, I did like it, but I don't know a lot about it, and I feel so bad because it sounds really, really interesting and intriguing, and now I'm left thinking, my God, what did I miss out on? One of the things I'm really curious about is the amount, I'm trying to find the right word for this, these characters to be able to do the costumes and the makeup and the headpieces and all of these things. Is it as expensive to do as it looks? To me, it just looks like the budget to be able to do that would be absolutely incredible.
In general, yes, it is extremely expensive to do so. And very tiring on actors, especially Shane, who played, go ahead.
I would think the time just alone of them to have to sit in a chair to be able to do all of that would be just astronomical. It blows my mind.
Yeah, it very much is so. So we shot the film in about 13 days, which is very quick, and a couple other reshoot days down the line. And out of those 13 days, I think our lead actor, Shane, who played the werewolf, was in the makeup chair, I think, 9 out of those days. And that includes all the different kind of makeups. And none of his skin was ever showing. But when he was playing that character, his eyes were covered, the sclera lenses, his teeth, his head, his face, his hands, his chest. And so the first time we did the makeup, it took upwards about 3.5 hours. And then towards the end, we got it to about an hour. He's a trooper, and he doesn't mind the makeup, and he finds it a lot easier for him to perform. But I do know there were a few times where he even said, man, this is taking its toll a little bit. And, as somebody who does makeup effects for a living, I've done makeups that can take upwards of 6 to 7 hours. And it's no easy task to be under all that stuff.
Yeah, I can't even imagine it. I applaud you because I just think it takes a lot of dedication, a lot of intricate detail, more so I think than even a regular movie, because you've got so much more detail just in each character to be able to do that.
Well, I appreciate it. It's a lot of work. It's definitely a lot of work, especially when you're working with almost no money.
Yeah.
So this is definitely a low budget film.
I think in every definition of the word, the film is the total round was about $25,000.
You're talking about the Ed Wood kind of budget, and Ed Wood truly created some masterpieces. I hope you like Ed, because I think Ed Wood did it with no money. He did it with Bela Lugosi. Well, that was just a comment. All right, next, Devin, you have a question because you're a filmmaker. You produced for us The Lizard Man Chronicle. It was something about the lizard people of Los Angeles. You did a great job doing a documentary, and you're very much a filmmaker. So do you have any questions for our guest?
Oh, well, thank you for the kind words. And, you know, I also grew up in kind of the backwoods in the middle of nowhere, Kansas. So, and I always, you know, was interested in film and video and loved to pretend that we had a television station in our basement and we'd film shows and music videos. So I'm just curious who maybe some of your influences are as film directors or even actors, and what some of your favorite movies are.
I'd say growing up, it was definitely Paul Nash for one, but then it was also many of the Jack Pierce makeup effects artists, Rick Baker, Dick Smith, those kind of guys, and a sense of directors, I'd say, like Lucio Fulci, Dario Argento, Leonowski, things like that. Like, those were my inspirations growing up, and it very much influenced the stuff I ended up eventually making. In a sense of, like, well, the movie that got me into everything was the original Evil Dead. I saw that at 5, and that was the first time I saw any movie where I questioned how they could look like that, how the effects were being done, because I didn't look at them as effects at the time. I just said, how do they do that? And that's when my mother said, well, that's just makeup. It's not real. And I said, well, I know it's not real, but what are you talking about? And she said, well, that's a makeup artist, and that's a job that somebody does on a movie. And I said, well, I want to do that. That's cool. And then it just went from there. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great movie. And that's so cool to hear how you had that realization, you know.
Yeah, it was almost like an epiphany moment. 5.
That's a great question, Devin. Thank you very much. Our Surgeon General, Dr. Trey Dunaway, do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, you know, as a filmmaker, director, here's my question. As I grew up as a kid, I'd watch black and white horror pictures that were on television on Saturdays, and that was the spooky stuff. And when I was a little older, maybe Alfred Hitchcock, The Birds, and then it kind of evolved into different genres of horror, science fiction horror, like Alien. So it was the bad guys from outer space doing evil things. And then when I was in college, the cult classic of A Night of the Living Dead, we used to go to the BioSci Auditorium and watch that on Halloween. And then that spawned this whole generation now of zombie films as a genre. What do you think the next big genre will be in horror films? Is there going to be a theme, as we've seen in the past? Do you see something coming down the tracks that everybody will create movies about a certain topic of horror science fiction?
I mean, the one thing I think I've been noticing lately with things coming out is that there's more of a crave for the supernatural thriller unknown aspects. I've noticed that in a lot of movies. And you're very much right. You can almost go down the decades and you can see what kind of movies, horror films, were prominent in each decade. And I think right now, from the things I've been seeing, a lot of things that are coming out now that are new, a lot of them are these very out-of-the-box, disturbing, supernatural-type thriller movies. And I think those are the – I can't really think of a specific, like I can't say, like, zombie or ghost or anything, because it seems like it's so vast but I think that's the road it seems to be sticking at least from the things I've been seeing.
So an unknown evil entity that is maybe ill-defined but still very evil, and you could have a variety of directions that could branch off into.
Yes, very much so. I think that's, yeah.
Well, it's going to be great for people that work in creative elements and things like Scarycast. We talk about all sorts of different things that could certainly be the subject of a horror film. So maybe John, you will discuss something on one of your podcasts that will inspire some future director, filmmaker.
Well, I hope we do. I mean, I think it's important for people to listen to what we talk about, because we really explore, I guess, kind of the far reaches of, you know, whatever we're doing, whether it's the Stanley Kubrick stuff, which was just incredible when it was incredible in the 80s and 90s, and we get, you know, 2000 and 2010, and those are great things. And then we look at The Shining and, you know, what we think about what Stanley Kubrick did for us. But, you know, the more we talk about it, the more topics that we discuss, I think the better off we are. And I think we might. And I'll tell you one thing now, and Kyler, I'm going to get to you in just a second. But Eric, have you ever heard of analog horror?
I know analog, but I don't know if I know analog horror.
Well, it started with Debbie Harry, and there was a film she did, and it was incredible. What they did was they used old film footage from from like stock footage or whatever, and they used that and they integrated that into some really pretty good horror films. And that's something I'd like to talk with you about later, because I'm so interested in it. I kind of like became the analog horror guy on the internet, and I have a lot of people that are interested in it, and I don't know what to say, so this is terrible. So we'll talk about that later. But yeah, you know, Trey, that's a good point. I hope that we can engender some new directors and new filmmakers to talk about these things and do them, because people do love horror films. They really do. And Kyler, do you have a question for our guest?
Kind of, yeah. I'm not super experienced on this topic because I'm not a huge horror person myself, but as a director, I'm curious what, like, do you have is there a environment or a specific place you've always dreamed of shooting one of your movies, or any ideas that you've came up with? Is there one specific spot you've always wanted to go?
I think I've always wanted to shoot in London, just because a lot of my favorite movies were shot there or in Rome. mainly just because I'm such a big fan of those certain movies made times in certain places. And back when we were originally, I was talking with a few producers a few years ago about when we were originally going to do Wild Purgis, because the project's been on and off for a long time. And when we were going to have a bigger budget at one point, we were talking about shooting over there, and I just got so excited for it. Of course, it didn't end up happening. So I think those two places, yeah, those two places would be the places I would always want to go shoot something at.
Yeah, I could see that. That'd be really cool.
Well, that's an interesting thought. I mean, it's like where you can shoot a film like that. And of course, London, and I mentioned this before, the great Werewolf of London with Henry Hill. That was such a great film. And don't know if everybody's familiar with it, but it was just a good, it was like 1935 or 36. But it was a really good film, and, you know, it just captured everyone's imagination. So anyway, those are great topics, and those are great things that we can discuss further. So I guess I would like to talk about how does your plot relate to Walpurgis Night?
So the one thing that was always prominent in all the Paul Naschy movies that they would always talk about, they would always use the name Walpurgis Night, and somewhere in the film where they would say, like, oh, we have to do something before Walpurgis Night, or if this doesn't happen before Walpurgis Night, this is going to happen. So I never knew what it meant. I just thought it was a made-up thing until I, like, researched it, you know, and found out that, you know, there's a lot of different variations of it, but the one that I found that was interesting was that it was the Sabbath for witches to conjure things and to transform generations into different animals, including werewolves. So I always thought that was a great spotlight for something, for somebody being a werewolf that I've never seen in a movie before. So that's basically where that's my extent of knowledge to that. I'm sure a lot of it is folklore, but still found it interesting regardless. So I use that for a big basis of my film. So that's why it's called that.
Okay, well, that's a great idea. And now what I would like to introduce into our equation is the following. Walpurgis Night is the subject of Bram Stoker's classic short story, Dracula's Guest. Now, Dracula's Guest is like chapter zero of Dracula. And it talks about a man that wants to go out into the woods and see all this great scenery and everything right around, well, actually, it turns out, on Walpurgis Night. And he goes out there. He convinces a man that drives carriages to take him out there. And the man says, we've got to go back because there's a bad storm. Not only is there a bad storm, but it's Walpurgis Night or Walpurgis Nicht. And what happens is this gentleman says, you know, listen, if you're scared going back to Munich, I will stay out here and take care of myself. Well, what happens is a terrible snowstorm happens around dusk, and it's horrible, and he makes his way into a crypt. And not only is it a crypt, not only is it scary, but when the lightning flashes, he sees a woman with red lips. She looks like she's still alive, and she's in the crypt. And these hands pull him away from that. And he passes out because he is terrified. It's cold. It's everything. And what happens is he wakes up to the sounds of musket fire. And there are several soldiers who have come out apparently to rescue him. And they come out. They fire these balls. Yes, Robin, did you have a question? I guess not. So anyway, what happens is a very large wolf is covering this man, and trying to keep him alive, because obviously this large wolf is Dracula, and Dracula wants to keep him alive to bring him up to the castle. It's Jonathan Harker. He wants to make sure that his entire scenario works out, that he goes to London and all that. So it's a very interesting story. It's a wonderful story. And it's like you have to – I was talking with Kyler a little bit earlier tonight. It's like you really have to know a lot about Dracula, the book, to understand what this story is about. But it's really a cool story. And the whole fact is it happens on Walpurgis Night. We've got a wolf. We've got a werewolf or something like that. We've got a vampire. We've got everything possible in this story. So this is probably absolutely not probably, this is absolutely not the type of story that you are portraying, but it's a really interesting story, and it's something that a number of us Gothic fans have lived by and loved for years. Now, does this sound, this doesn't sound really anything like what you guys were doing, does it?
No.
Okay, well, that's fine. So, Kyler, I'm sorry, Kyler, you just asked him a great question. So I wanted to ask you, how do you think your Walpurgis Night compares with the one that I just discussed? I mean, it's kind of interesting vampire take on things. We got a vampire, we got a werewolf, we got all kinds of stuff. And how does it really compare? How do the two compare?
I would say very little, because the story you said that was from the Bram Stoker story, it almost sounds to me like it's like a deleted chapter from the Dracula book almost.
Well, it is. It's actually the deleted chapter zero.
Oh, gotcha. That's what you meant by that. I gotcha. Well, that's what's interesting to me about it, is because I've never heard of it at all. So it's interesting to hear about something like that, because again, it's a part of a very, very familiar story that, you know, I've never heard of, and I'm sure quite a few other people don't know about either. But it's very interesting. I mean, like I said before, talking to you originally, I had never heard of it. So it's always cool to hear a new version of a story and a topic that I've never heard of before, because that stuff really interests me. But comparing the two, it's like night and day, I think, because my film has almost nothing to do with those sort of things, minus the werewolf part, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very interesting. Then, and when I saw your poster, you had this great picture of a werewolf. And I said, oh, my God, what is going on here? Because there is a werewolf in Walpurgis Night or Dracula's Guest. It was like, wow, I mean, what are we doing here? And that's why I contacted you and I said, let's get on here and talk. And I hope it hasn't been a bad experience. But I would like for my hosts to give us their take or whatever they can, or with another round of questions. And we'll start with the Queen of Scary Cast.
No, I'm just like taking this all in. I need to go last because I'm enjoying this a lot, but I'm learning a lot. But this is so
okay.
Off topic for me. So this is a good thing for me because, like I said, I'm learning a lot. I'm very, very much enjoying it and the whole process that you guys are talking about, but I'm not familiar with these films. So let's start on the other end.
Okay. Well, Robin, I've got a question for you. Are you
what?
Very? I mean, I know that you're familiar with Bigfoot. You're basically the queen of our Bigfoots, and you know a lot about Dogman. What do you know about werewolves?
Werewolves are, you can't confuse them with the Dogman because they're completely different. You know, your Dogman are going to have a tail, and traditionally, not in the movies, but traditionally, your werewolves don't. They're much bigger than a Dogman. My contact with them, they seem to be a little bit more level-headed some of the dog men can get a little bit uppity. You know, I don't have a great deal of contact with the werewolves. I do have one that I have regular contact with. And when I was in Michigan, we had one that was there as well. And we also had the dogmen, but they're a bit smaller than your werewolf. Traditionally, your werewolves are a lot bigger, a lot more muscular. And don't get me wrong, the dogmen are massive, but when it comes to the werewolf, they are even bigger. And I don't believe I think that they're all over the place, but I don't believe there is as many populated as there are the dogmen.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Do you believe, now this is an odd question, I hope it's not too odd, do you believe in the idea that werewolves morph in from humans to being werewolves?
You know what, and this is going to surprise you. I think, I'm not going to say it can't happen. Sometimes never say never. I do know this, though. What normally shapeshifts or morphs or whatever you want to call it are anything that's created with the ET. So, like, you know, we have the Bigfoot, the Dogman, the Cat People, the Goatman, the Lizardman, all that stuff. They all can shapeshift, and it's because they have that ET hybrid in them. So if you're talking about a regular human being, just solid flesh and blood, I do have a difficult time believing. If you are talking about a regular human that has been taken possession by an ET, which we know happens with some regularity, then absolutely they could in a heartbeat, because the shape-shifting would come off of that ET genetics.
Well, it's interesting because I don't think we've ever heard anybody talk about werewolves like this, and that's a very interesting take on them. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Eric, I don't know. Well, what do you think? Do you have any comments? You can say no comment, and we can go on. But, I mean, I think it's very interesting what Robin just said, because she has a lot of experience with dogmen, a lot of experience with Bigfoot, and she's kind of like our cryptic lady. So what do you think, buddy?
Well, I think it's really interesting, and I have heard about this before. I do look into this stuff a lot. By no means an aficionado or an expert, but I have heard and read about things like that before, and I find it really interesting because this stuff, you know, especially like with werewolf stuff, dates back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So to me, it's always the idea of these other things that are possible, you know, instead of the stereotypical explanation. Because in reality, the idea, the werewolf lore that everyone knows about, in a sense of you can kill them with a silver bullet, they turn into a werewolf under a full moon, et cetera, that's all made up for the Wolfman. That was never a thing.
Absolutely.
Until 1941. So the thing is, everyone always seems to think that that's the concept of a werewolf or a wolfman, but in reality, that's made up. And a lot of the other folklore about werewolves, especially dating back to 500 years ago, are very, very different. And that stuff interests me. And that's always something I've wanted to possibly make a thing about is maybe like a 1500s account of a werewolf in like France or something like that. Because a lot of the times it was either believed that they were what you were saying before, which was involved with a kind of extraterrestrial help, or it was a mentally insane person. So that's the stuff that interests me. So I find it all interesting. I don't find it wacky or strange.
Well, I find it extremely interesting. And Robin, thank you for that. And absolutely, Eric, thanks a lot. Dr. Trey Donaway, you're next.
Well, stretching on that point, if you're looking for the new thing, if you introduce the extraterrestrial element to any of these horror genres, that would be a really interesting twist on it. Have any films been done where Dracula is actually a merged species between an extraterrestrial and a human, or a dog man could be an extraterrestrial combination with a dog or a wolf? Any movies ever been made about that kind of a topic? Is a different genre of science fiction, horror?
I can only think of one that I saw, and I don't remember the name of it whatsoever. But it was a Bigfoot movie that the whole time it's like a Bigfoot, and then you don't really see it, but it's like a Bigfoot. And at the end, it's revealed that it's an alien that's a Bigfoot.
Was it a friendly monster or was it an evil monster?
No, it was killing all of them.
Okay. Because, see, I purposely avoided, especially with Robin on the call, I wouldn't want to make a Bigfoot out to be an evil monster killing people, but there are other permutations and combinations of genetics that you could come up with that would be truly evil.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of Bigfoot movies are always the Bigfoot going around killing people.
I know, and it's so sad because most of them aren't like that.
It paints the wrong picture. From listening to Robin, it would be almost like an E.T. What was E.T.'s name? He was just E.T.
Didn't they just call him E.T.?
Where he's scary initially, but as you got to know E.T., he was a wonderful human, but a wonderful person, a wonderful individual.
Yeah, and there's good and bad in all of them.
Right. Well, if you ever want to get an inside track on this E.T. combination that you could adapt for other creatures, Robin is the best source I can think of.
Oh, thanks, Trey.
Well, you are.
You're awesome.
All right, Eric, now you see where we come from. We think Robin is wonderful. We think Robin really does know a lot about the Bigfoot and about the E.T. connection. And that's something that I actually talked about, I guess, on Friday when I was actually being interviewed to host a show on Discovery Channel. This is crazy. And I was talking about that exact same thing. So it's really great. And Robin has certainly taught us a lot about it. So, hey, Robin, the Queen of Scary Cast, thanks a lot.
Well, thank you, guys. And the guests tonight, you are just wonderful. I really am more intrigued where I want to watch these movies now. Before I didn't. And I think it wasn't that I was not interested in the film, but because I've dealt with all these cryptids and all in the ETs and stuff ever since I was a toddler. So I shy away from anything that isn't a comedy, because if I watch anything other than that, they tend to not come after me, but they just show up more than what they already do. And now I actually really want to watch it. I think it sounds really good. I think as much horror as I got into was like Abbott and Costello and Frankenstein, if you even consider that horror. But this has been extremely informative, and I thank you for that, because it really – I just found it fascinating.
Good. I'm glad. I'm happy that it seemed to persuade you. I mean, and the good thing is with my film coming out is it a dark movie, but it's very much just a monster movie, and it's very much made up and fairy tale, and it's very much suspension of disbelief.
Well, that sounds really cool. I think we're all going to enjoy that. And now Devin Tate, our filmmaker here at Scarycast, what do you have to ask Eric?
Yeah, Eric, I just love to hear, since we were talking about, makeup artists and visual effects, if there's any stories you have about like a really effective effect or makeup effect that you had used in one of your films, or maybe the opposite side of that, something that you tried that you thought would work out but ended up just not looking the way you pictured it.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the times, I mean, I'm a, what you would call a self-hating perfectionist. So a lot of times, most of them don't turn out the way I want them to. Because I think we all wish with, you know, anything that we do, we wish we could see the final product before we make it, so we know what to improve on. But I've done a lot of some of my favorite stuff recently that I've done. I can't necessarily talk about for NDA reasons, but in a sense of like, I was really happy, I will say, with the way the werewolf turned out in the film, because we had made a short version. It's not of the same story, but a short version of the feature that I ended up doing about 5, almost 6 years ago, and did a werewolf makeup for that. And at the time, I hated it, like with every bit of me. So for me to do the feature was a way of almost redeeming myself and doing it the way I originally wanted to do it. And I think I was able to get it in there somehow, at least along those lines of more of what I wanted. So out of all the stuff I've done recently, the stuff I can at least talk about, that one I was really happy how it turned out, because it wasn't necessarily an easy task, because with shooting and directing and producing and every other job I had to do on this film, I also had to make all the makeup effects. And it was a lot of work to try to get it so we could shoot it and it would work.
Well, we're guessing that it worked, and that was great. And thanks for that remark. Now, Kyler, what do you have to ask our guest tonight?
I think the only thing I was kind of – I may have missed it, but when is this movie coming out? Because I'm ready to go watch it right now.
well, we're looking towards November now. And now when I say November, that's my assumption for right now, in a sense of, because once it gets sent off to the distribution guys, they will really decide when it goes out or not. But at the same time, I will have the film. So anyone who would actually be interested seeing it, I would be more than willing to send them a way to see it before it actually goes out into the world, because I am aware that it is a possibility that it can take longer than November. I will have the film done by then, but I don't know what they're going to plan on doing.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'd love to see that.
Well, that's great. That's very exciting. So, I mean, Eric, it's been wonderful talking to you. I think we've got some great things that we can talk about further if you'd like to be back on ScaryCast. And I think people are going to have a good time watching your film. We will certainly promote it when it comes out. And I think maybe a couple of our, in fact, probably all of our ScaryCasters might like a way to watch this film. I'm kind of thinking that. So we can talk about that later as well. You think we might be able to arrange a special viewing for the ScaryCasters?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that's great. Well, I tell you what, I think you have really come across as a good filmmaker, an interesting person, and you got a great take on things. And I think we've asked some good questions, and we have kind of planted the seeds for other folks to really, you know, go into depth about some of the topics you talked about. So I wanted to say thank you very much for being with us tonight, and I wanted to thank our co-hosts. We've had Dr. Trey Donaway, our Surgeon General. We've had Robin, the Queen of ScaryCast. We've had Devin Tate, our man in Hollywood. Well, he's in Sacramento now. And, of course, Kyler Smith down there in Houston. So I wanted to say thanks a lot to all of our ScaryCaster hosts. I wanted to thank you for being here with us. And now next week, we're going to talk about ghost transmissions. Dr. Trey, we talked a little bit about that today, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. And I find it a little fanciful, but I sure like to hear some information on it. And if there's science behind it, it'd be very interesting to listen to that science.
It's interesting. I did a little more research, and there really might be some science around it. So I will talk to you about it this week, and we'll see where it goes. And then, of course, the week after that, we've got Don LeMay back with us, one of our favorite guests, and he's always here the first Monday of every month. So anyway, thanks to everybody for being with us on Scarycast. We'll see you next time, 9 p.m. Eastern on Monday. So thanks a lot, and we'll see you then. Take care. Everybody say goodbye.
Goodbye, guys.
Well, thanks a lot.